Good morning. This is James Stevenson in the NBC newsroom in New York with the news from around the world and calling in NBC observers overseas and in Washington. First, the highlights. Allied armies from east and west are moving for the final crushing of Berlin. The American 9th is fast building up its Elbe River bridgehead for a mass drive, while Russian airborne troops have landed within 23 miles east of the German capital. The United States 7th has entered the Nazi shrine city of Nuremberg, and the 3rd is at the edges of the Czechoslovakian border. The Allied offensive in Italy is moving slowly against bitter German resistance in the heavily mined areas south of the key center of Bologna. In the Pacific, United States forces have landed on the little island of Ie, 3 miles west of Okinawa, and are heading for the 3-runway airfield, an important military objective. And at the same time, another force of B-29s again hit the Japanese home island of Kyushu, attacking airfields from which the Japs have been sending planes into the Okinawa battle. And on the home front, President Truman's first public address has received universal and enthusiastic approval as the nation rallies round him to prosecute the war to total victory and win a lasting peace. More about this from Leif Eade in Washington later. Now, a few words from your announcer.
Did you ever hear of the dangerous pennies? Well, they're the pennies that are being spent by the American people today in the form of overselling prices. They don't seem very important to the persons who spend them, but they add up to $1 billion a year. They add up to higher prices, which may lead to inflation at the most critical time in our history. By paying out these dangerous pennies, by allowing prices to creep up a penny here and a penny there, we can undo all the good work we've done so far. We could win the war abroad and lose the peace at home. So if you're a housewife, check ceiling prices before you buy. If you're a merchant, make sure that every item in your store is at ceiling price or below. Guard against the peril of dangerous pennies. Now here's James Stevenson and your World News Roundup.
Allied planes have accounted for 933 German planes destroyed on the ground and in the air in the past 24 hours. This huge toll of the Luftwaffe brings the total count for the month of April close to 3,000 and practically spells the end of the once vaunted German Air Force. General Karl A. Spatz, commander of the United States Strategic Air Force in Europe, issued an order of the day proclaiming that the strategic air war against Germany had been won, and that hereafter the Strategic Air Force will work in close cooperation with the tactical air forces which support the Allied armies. Thus, one phase of the European war is officially ended, with a stunning victory, giving the Allies complete mastery of the air over Germany. The victory was symbolized in a meeting of American and Russian planes, which exchanged greetings over the central German war zone. This was the first actual tactical juncture of the Allies from east and west. Meanwhile, the ground troops not far behind the air forces are moving rapidly toward a juncture in the Dresden area, which will cut Germany in two. And from then on, the war in the north will develop into a series of encircling movements, trapping and wiping out Nazi pockets wherever they are found. However, this will not mean that the war is over. General Eisenhower himself has warned that victory in Europe will not be proclaimed until all important enemy pockets have been wiped out, and probably not until Allied troops occupy the whole of Germany. Eisenhower repeated his belief that there will not be a formal German surrender, but that the Nazis will continue to resist in separate groups until they run out of ammunition and supplies and find themselves entrapped. And then each group, as it finds itself in a hopeless position, will give up. General Eisenhower's statement may be interpreted as meaning that there will be no VE Day until Hitler and the rest of his Nazi co-criminals are rounded up from their Bavarian hideouts. Bjorn Bjornsson is with the 9th Army in Germany. And for our first report from overseas, we go now to NBC with the 9th Army. Come in, Bjorn Bjornsson with the 9th Army. We are sorry we are unable to contact Bjorn Bjornsson, our NBC correspondent with the 9th Army. Here is the news from the Western Front as we have it now in the NBC newsroom in New York. American 3rd Army troops have captured Plauen, a city of 113,000 population in Saxony, northeast of Hof, which was captured yesterday. Now, our engineers have told us that we can contact NBC in Paris, so at this time, we go to NBC in Paris.
This is Paul Archinard in Paris. The Ruhr pocket battle is not quite over yet, but we may even now consider it as well now ended. 175,000 prisoners have been taken to date. Men surrender in bunches of 5,000, and an estimated number of only 30,000 German fighter remains to be rounded up. This naturally creates a very big problem for the supply department. Prisoners of war camps must be organized on the spot, but the men must be fed so that seaports are more than ever necessary. That is one reason why the Battle of Bordeaux is important. With the Germans cleared out of the region around the Gironde River estuary, one of the largest French ports will be available. On first sight, the battle down there may appear of secondary importance, but in reality, the objective is very important. FFI troops supported by American air forces have advanced along the peninsula between the river and the sea and have now encountered a wide anti-tank ditch which stretches across the peninsula. Bombers are blasting the ditch to fill it in and make the passage possible, while the French fleet, with RAF planes for observation, shells the shore positions. In the air over Germany, activity has been intense with good weather aiding. There were 6,000 sorties yesterday alone, and an all-time record was set when 879 German aircraft were destroyed in one day. 47 of these were shot down from the air. The rest were caught on the ground helpless, 600 being destroyed by the 8th Air Force alone. Up in northern Holland, the 3rd Canadian Division has reached the sea on several points and is only 200 yards from the famous causeway over the Zuider Zee.
We go now to NBC in the Pacific.
This is Joe Hainline speaking from off the coast of Okinawa. In years to come, the battle for Okinawa probably will offer some excellent courses for study by students of military strategy. On this island today, there are being fought two separate and distinct types of warfare. To the north, the Marines of the 3rd Amphibious Corps are using their characteristic tactics of bypassing strong points and advancing quickly, leaving remnants of the war to be wrapped up later. The scattered local resistance encountered up there lends itself particularly well to these tactics. However, along the southern front, we're fighting one of those old-style slugging matches with tactics that have remained almost unchanged since the beginning of modern warfare. Long lines of crosses cross and recross through the serene farmlands that extend some 7,000 yards across the narrow neck of island. Thousands of men sit in the doubtful protection of these earthworks and glare at each other through a slender, separating no-man's land. At this stage of the game, the Japs have the advantage in their well-prepared earthen and concrete forts. But American artillery keeps pecking away at the Jap positions while the enemy answers in kind. Desultory firing can be heard throughout the island almost any time of day or night, each side warily watching the other, seemingly just waiting for a show of weakness before unleashing an annihilating blow. Meanwhile, the center of Okinawa, between these two widely separated battlefronts, is rapidly becoming Americanized. Tons upon tons of earth-moving machinery have been moved ashore, and these fantastic monsters are proceeding with characteristic American speed and dispatch to change the face of Okinawa Jima. Almost overnight, narrow surfaced roads have appeared. Remnants thrown up, hills scooped away, valleys filled in, airstrips leveled. Sometimes I can't help but wonder what these simple Okinawans must think when they see what is happening to their island. The history of 1,000 years is being rooted up from the soil. American industry has done more in the past 17 days to change the lives of these people than the Japanese government has in all its years of occupation. This is Joe Hainline returning you to the United States.
King George and Queen Elizabeth joined Prime Minister Churchill and members of the British Parliament in St. Paul's Cathedral today in a service of tribute to President Roosevelt. The King and Queen were accompanied by Princess Elizabeth, heir presumptive to the British throne. The selection of St. Paul's Cathedral for the services, as well as the attendance of the royal family, indicates the British government's desire to accord the late president all the honors at its command. St. Paul's customarily is the scene of Britain's great national memorial services. President Truman's address to Congress yesterday has been warmly accepted by the Russians as assurance that he plans to carry out the program of President Roosevelt, of which the Soviet Union feels it is an integral part. Now for a report of the nation's business, we go to NBC in Washington.
This is Leif Eade in Washington. And this morning you can find political wiseacres backtracking all over Washington. In the last 48 hours, they've been free and easy in their predictions of a lot of quick changes in the administration. Secretary Morgenthau, for instance, would go back to his Hudson Valley orchards. Francis Perkins back to New York. Francis Biddle would be out. Jimmy Burns would be in. Frank Walker, the Postmaster General, would quit, and so on. But things aren't working out that way. President Truman has asked Henry Morgenthau to stay on and promised the Treasury had the same support he received from President Roosevelt. Jimmy Burns says he has no plans to enter the government. Secretary Stettinius seems certain to stay on at the State Department, at least until after the San Francisco conference. And the new president's promise that the military leadership would go on unchanged and unhampered took a lot of the wind out of predictions that Harry Truman would make things hot now for, say, General Somerville, who often went to the mat with Truman when he was head of the Senate War Investigating Committee. So there won't be any big changes right now. The new president is walking softly, but Washington observers are sure that changes will be made later on. And Burns, as Secretary of State, doesn't seem unlikely when things settle down. Congress is holding its fire, too, for the time being. Almost everybody on the Hill found something to praise in President Truman's first address, either international cooperation or domestic policies. And Harry Truman's request for help from Congress made a big hit with the senators and representatives. But the more cynical of our Washington observers expect the sniping to begin in, say, from 60 to 90 days. Otherwise, in Washington, the new president's habit of early to rise and early to work is likely to cause some unhappiness among those called to White House conferences in the morning. He holds his first news conference this morning at 10:30, and all the Washington correspondents will be there on time. Last night, the Trumans moved into the Blair House across the street from the White House, and Mrs. Roosevelt has assured Mrs. Truman she can move into the executive mansion before the weekend. And General Marshall has kicked about congressmen going to the battlefront as individuals. He says it's a strain to provide protection for visitors. But with changes in the administration anticipated, Senator Thomas says it isn't likely that any senator will want to leave Washington right now. Ede in Washington, returning you to New York.
And this morning, we heard from NBC observers Paul Archinard at Allied headquarters in Paris, Joe Hainline on an American warship off the coast of Okinawa, and Leif Ead in Washington. Now here's your announcer, and then I'll be back with more news.
With the war in Europe approaching a climax, some Americans have begun to relax their vigilance against careless talk, the discussion of war information so often picked up by enemy ears. Many people seem to feel that it doesn't matter anymore, that they can talk as freely as they please. Well, this is a dangerous situation because the fact is that the greatest mass movement of men and materiel in history is due to take place in the months ahead as Germany is defeated and we turn our full strength toward Japan. Japan is desperate for information, alert for any scrap of conversation that may be fitted into a pattern and used against us. So don't forget that for a moment. And remember these rules always. If you hear war information from someone, don't repeat it. If you see it for yourself, don't repeat it. Discuss only that war information you read in the newspapers or magazines and hear over the radio. Guard against careless talk until we have won on all fronts. And again, here's James Stevenson in the NBC newsroom.
Harry will get along all right. That is the considered opinion of the mother of the nation's new president. Mrs. Martha E. Truman, who is 92 years of age, expressed confidence in her son in an interview last night. She added that she couldn't really be glad he's president because she is so sorry that President Roosevelt is dead. She explained that if Harry had been voted in, she'd be out waving a flag. But it doesn't seem right to be very happy or wave any flags now. Mrs. Truman, who is alert and well-informed and quite agile for her years, said she and her daughter, Miss Mary Truman, are planning a trip to Washington sometime, but the date has not been set. Postmaster General Frank C. Walker announced that Franklin D. Roosevelt's name will be added to a new 5-cent postage stamp commemorating the San Francisco United Nations Conference. And that's the morning's news from around the world. This is James Stevenson in the NBC newsroom in New York saying goodbye, and I'll be seeing you tomorrow morning.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.